The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
It's good to see you here. And thank you for being so patient with our technology. Do you ever ask yourself why you listen to Dharma talks? What is it that brings you here on a Thursday night to receive the Zen teachings? And who says that whoever gets up and speaks has any authority? These are important questions you should ask yourself. What is the authority to offer Zen teachings? Or any spiritual teachings? You know, in our tradition we have forms and traditions that help us authorize teachers. Which is what sensei means, just teacher. And you go to Japan, you know, you've got your tea sensei and your clock sensei, and anybody, whatever people are teaching, they're senseis. And here, in the States anyway, as far as I've experienced, sensei becomes like this kind of like major spiritual authority. It just means teacher, right? So last Saturday we had a Dharma transmission ceremony for Kaku. So he received Dharma transmission and became a sensei in our tradition. He's been studying for 15 or 16 years with us, and before that quite a few years with Daido Lori at Zen Mount Tremper. And we all know Kaku is also a Unitarian minister. So he went through the 500 or 600 koans of our system and went through all of the kind of book study, the book reality study that koan study is with us. And you know, here at the Village Zendo, my first Dharma successor is Joshin Sensei, followed by Shuzen Sensei, who has a Dharma group in Philadelphia. Ryotan Sensei, Shinryu Sensei, Myoko Sensei. So that's the senseis in our group. And at some point, Bernie Roshi gave me Inka, which gave me the title Old Teacher. So Roshi, teacher, old teacher. So who of these people really have the authority to teach Zen, you might ask yourself? We call it a one-to-one transmission. The ceremony is one person to one person. Is there anything, thing that's transmitted? It's just recognition. There's nothing given. There's nothing to give. It's recognition that a person has studied enough and is ready to lead others. It does not mean that they have the authority to abuse others. Actually, in a few weeks, I'll be on a panel at the Rubin about spiritual authority, spiritual abuse, with Gina Sharp of the Spirit Rock tradition and Pilar Jennings, who is a practitioner in the Tibetan tradition. So they've got three major traditions. And we'll be discussing primarily the abuses of spiritual authority. As a matter of fact, when we met online to talk about it, that's all anybody wanted to talk about. I thought, do we want to talk at all about the uses? of spiritual authority. But you know, if you've been around a while, you know that there's a lot of abuse by spiritual teachers. And Zen is not free of this stain. Only have to mention recently Eido Roshi and Sasaki Roshi. They had used the power of their tradition to encourage people to adore them, to elevate them. And when that happens, the teacher becomes the voice of authority, spiritual authority, and has the power to control. And this can lead to physical and material harm. Student loses any sense of judgment, any sense of it, their own power and authority, and follows the demands of the teacher, usually around money or sex, power sometimes. So in psychology, you know, we might call that student's subservience transference, where we redirect the kind of childhood experiences we had with our parents or other authority figures, and we see that, we direct that, and we say, oh, this person knows. This is someone in an adult, like a doctor, a boss, or a spiritual teacher. And it creates this kind of idealization, creates a kind of blindness. And so we abandon ourselves. Over there, that's where the teachings are. Rather than thinking of what is said as something that resonates within our own authority. It's a very different kind of thing. So, there are these caves just on the Silk Road where a lot of Buddhist scrolls were found in Dongguan. I had the privilege to go there a few years ago. It's just amazing. They found a really wonderful version of the Platform Sutra there. And also there was a scroll that had a story that struck me when I was going through my notes today. And here, this is on a scroll that unsigned, but probably from about 200 in the Common Era, Buddhist scroll. It says, "The Dharma has no magnitude, no form, no altitude. To illustrate, here is a big stone in the court attached to your house. You sit on it, sleep on it, and have no feeling of fear. One day, you suddenly conceive the idea of painting a picture on it. You hire an artist and have a Buddha figure painted on it. And you take it for the Buddha. No longer dare you sleep on it. You are fearful of desecrating the image, which was originally nothing but a huge rock. It is due to the change in your mind that you no longer sleep on it. And what is this so-called mind, anyway? It is but your own brush pieced out of your imagination, which was turned to stone into the Buddha figure. The feeling of fear is your own creation. The stone itself is indeed devoid of merit or demerit. All is just the brushwork of your own imagination. From the first, not a thing there is except what you have made out of your elusive mind." I love this. It is so true. It's such a clear expression of what we do all the time, of course, not just in the spiritual domain, but that projection. And we paint something, and then it becomes something we want to adore or vilify. I just want to really consider for how important it is that we not take these Dharma teachers as some kind of gods or some sort of authority that is other than what we ourselves can communicate with the teachers and find our own center. Ideally, teachers are people who have studied a long time and have sincerely practiced and have met their stuff. So what we need to do is be able to find the truth of us, our own self, how to find the truth of you, yourself, not the teacher's truth. At this very moment, what is the truth of you, yourself? Is a line from a koan that we're studying in the path class now. It's case 23 in the Mumon Khan. Think neither good nor evil. And there's a long backstory in the koan, and in a nutshell, it's Wei Ning, the sixth ancestor, who, out of which our tradition comes. He was poor. He was illiterate. And he came from the south. same kind of stories we have here. He went to a monastery up north, and he bested in a Dharma combat the senior monk, the most important monk at this monastery, who was from the north, who was literate, and everyone assumed would become the next patriarch of Zen. But there was a Dharma combat based on poetry, and Wei Ning won. And he was secretly given the Dharma transmission at night, at midnight. His teacher said, but you have to escape because this is not going to be acceptable to the gang. And so he ran away. And sure enough, the next day when the head monk found out what had happened, he gathered together a bunch of monks, and they gathered weapons and went after chasing the Wei Ning. And this story is when they overtake him. And Wei Ning is there, and he sees this huge mob of monks. And the other thing is that Wei Ning's is from the south, and kind of cult, physically, they're small people. And all these people are from the north, and they're really big, and they're coming towards him, and it's very frightening. So he takes the robe, the symbol that gives the authority of Dharma transmission, and he puts it on a rock. And he says, "This robe symbolizes faith. How can it be fought for with force? I leave it to you to take it." Myo went over, tried to pick up the robe, but he couldn't pick it up. He couldn't pick up this symbol of authority. It was, as the koan says, it was as immovable as a mountain. Myo was terrified, hesitated, and said, "Oh, damn. I have come for Dharma, not the robe. Duh. I beg of you, please teach me, O lay brother." So just in that moment when he was unable to pick up the authority, he realized that that wasn't what he was after. He was after the truth, the real truth. That's what we're after. Why else would you be here on this cold night? Huh? So I've come for Dharma, not for the robe. I beg of you, please teach me, lay brother. It's very important to know that he was a layman. And the sixth patriarch, Wei Ning, says, "Think neither good nor evil. At such a moment, what is the true self of Monk Myo?" And then, according to the koan, that just hit Myo just right. He saw it. Think neither good nor evil. Drop away all the bullshit. What is the true self of Monk Myo? So the koan says, at this he was at once enlightened, and his whole body was dripping with sweat. With tears he made a bow and asked, besides these secret words and meanings, is there any significance, other significance or not? And Wei Ning said, what I've told you is not secret. If you realize your true self, what is secret is in you yourself. Then Myo says, although at the monastery I followed other monks in training, I didn't awaken to my true self. Thanks to your instruction, which is to the point, I am like one who has drunk water and actually experienced it himself, whether it's warm or cold. So, you know, that's really important. When you hear somebody tell you all about enlightenment, it's just bullshit. Until you yourself can taste it. So he says, you are really my lay brother. The koan for me is asking us, how do we recognize our own authority, our own inner stability and strength? How can we work with others, other teachers and students, and still manifest our original true nature? How do we open ourselves to the teachings? It's important. You can't just walk in to a Dharma center and do everything your way, right? Headstands on the cushions or sleeping. There's something there to learn. And yet, where is the authority? Where's the balance there? There's a Vietnamese poet that I'm very fond of, Thu Lu, who was from the 11th century, and he wrote, if we answer yes, even a speck of dust has existence. If we answer no, then the entire universe is void. Yes and no, like the moon's face in the river. We cannot say it's there. We cannot say it isn't. Our mind is like that moon in the river. The moon in the sky is what this poem is evoking. But what we see is the moon in the river, the reflection. Sometimes it breaks apart. Sometimes it's clear and still. And sometimes we can't even see it. What is it that we can see? How is it that we can see that difference between yes and no? Who are we? Where is your true self? A woman Zen master from the 12th century wrote, suddenly I've made contact with the tip of my nose, and my cleverness melts like ice and shatters tiles. What need for Bodhidharma to have come from the West? What a waste for the second patriarch to have paid his respects. To ask further about what is this and what is that would signal defeat by a regiment of straw bandits. What are those straw bandits? Those constant movements of our minds. We can only let them be. All our ideas about how we can be better, or how we should follow this rule, or we should follow that rules. And, you know, Miao Zhang, she's telling us right here, tip of your nose. It's the same thing Wei Ning says to Monk Myo. What is the true self of you? Not those around you, not what you read, not what you heard, not what the teacher tells you, but your own experience. The truth of yourself. And that's how we encounter our own authority. Being who we are. Yeah, we study with teachers, we learn new things. We work with others. We change. We usually don't notice we're changing because everyone's changing around us at the same time, and so we hardly see that that's happening. Layer upon layer, dropping, sitting, mind open and quiet. Monk Myo, who raced to grab the robe, is a great lesson for all of us. Getting a colored roksu or a title. Is that what it's about? There's something deeper and richer than that that's always available to us. Always, right here, now. This is some abstraction. This is here, now. Thursday night. When we say Zen mind, beginner's mind, we're saying, you know, drop your ideas about what all this is about Zen, about teachers, about the right answers and wrong answers. Enter deeply into your own practice. That is the key. Over and over, with our breath, with our thoughts, coming back to the reality of this moment, of this person, not the story we read about so-and-so's enlightenment. You know, it used to be people would come in and they'd give me these stories that were like vaguely recognizable from various books around about people's enlightenment experiences and so forth. And they'd be like, well, I was sitting there and I had this. Your true self, just your funky self. That's what we're talking about. To be intimate with that. You don't need any more than that. You'll never grasp the moon. You'll never grasp the moon. It's ungraspable. At this very moment, right now, what is the truth of you, yourself, right now? That's all it's really about. Here's a gatha. In this very room where I sit in silence, the soft breath inside of me, now outside of me, inside, outside, what is the true me?